Chapter 5 The Tale of Grey Dick 1 Now it's 23, Roland thought that evening as he sat behind Eisenhart's rocking bee, listening to the boys shout and oi bark. Back in Gilead, this sort of porch behind the main house, facing the barns and the fields, would have been called the work stoop. 23 days until the wolves. And how many until Susanna falls? A terrible idea concerning that had begun to form in his head. Suppose Mia, the new she inside Susanna's skin, were to give birth to her monstrosity on the very day the wolves appeared. One wouldn't think that likely, but according to Eddie, coincidence had been cancelled. Roland thought he was probably right about that. Certainly there was no way to gauge the thing's period of gestation. Even if it had been a human child, 9 months might no longer be 9 months. Time had grown soft.
"Boys," Eisenhart bawled, "what in the name of the man Jesus am I going to tell my wife if you kill your sad selves jumping out of that barn?"
"We're okay," Benny Sleitman called. "Andy won't let us get hurt."
The boy, dressed in bib overalls and barefooted, was standing in the open bay of the barn, just above the carved letters which said Rocking Bee.
"Unless, do you really want us to stop, Si?"
Eisenhart glanced toward Roland, who saw Jake standing just behind Benny, impatiently waiting his chance to risk his bones. Jake was also dressed in bib overalls, a pair of his new friends, no doubt, and the look of them made Roland smile. Jake wasn't the sort of boy you imagined in such clothes, somehow.
"It's nil to me, one way or the other, if that's what you want to know," Roland said.
"Garn, then," the rancher called.
Then he turned his attention to the bits and pieces of hardware spread out on the boards.
"What do you think? Will any of them shoot?"
Eisenhart had produced all three of his guns for Roland's inspection. The best was the rifle the rancher had brought to town on the night he and Jaffords had called the meeting. The other two were pistols of the sort Roland and his friends had called barrel shooters as children, because of the oversized cylinders which had to be revolved with the side of the hand after each shot. Roland had disassembled Eisenhart's shooting irons with no initial comment. Once again, he had set out gun oil, this time in a bowl instead of a saucer.
"I said..."
"I heard you, Si," Roland said. "Your rifle is as good as I've seen this side of the great city. The barrel shooters," he shook his head, "that one with the nickel plating might fire, the other you might as well stick in the ground. Maybe it'll grow something better."
"Hate to hear you speak so," Eisenhart said. "These were from my dad and his dad before him and on back at least this many."
He raised 7 fingers and 1 thumb.
"That's back to before the wolves, you can. They was always kept together and passed to the likeliest son by dead letter. When I got him instead of my elder brother, I was some pleased."
"Did you have a twin?" Roland asked.
"Aye, Verna," Eisenhart said.
He smiled easily and often, and did so now beneath his great graying bush of a mustache, but it was painful. The smile of a man who doesn't want you to know he's bleeding somewhere inside his clothes.
"She was lovely as dawn, so she was. Passed on these 10 year or more. Went painful early, as the ruined ones often do."
"I'm sorry."
"Say thank you."
The sun was going down red in the southwest, turning the yard the color of blood. There was a line of rockers on the porch. Eisenhart was settled in one of them. Roland sat cross-legged on the boards, housekeeping Eisenhart's inheritance. That the pistols would probably never fire meant nothing to the gunslinger's hands, which had been trained to this work long ago and still found it soothing. Now, with a speed that made the rancher blink, Roland put the weapons back together in a rapid series of clicks and clacks. He set them aside on a square of sheepskin, wiped his fingers on a rag, and sat in the rocker next to Eisenhart's. He guessed that on more ordinary evenings, Eisenhart and his wife sat out here side by side, watching the sun abandon the day. Roland rummaged through his purse for his tobacco pouch, found it, and built himself a cigarette with Callahan's fresh, sweet tobacco. Rosalita had added her own present, a little stack of delicate corn shuck wraps she called pulls. Roland thought they wrapped as good as any cigarette paper, and he paused a moment to admire the finished product before tipping the end into the match Eisenhart had popped alight with one horny thumbnail. The gunslinger dragged deep and exhaled a long plume that rose but slowly in the evening air, which was still and surprisingly muggy for summer's end. "Good," he said, and nodded.
"Aye, may it do you fine. I never got the taste for it myself."
The barn was far bigger than the ranch house, at least 50 yards long and 50 feet high. The front was festooned with reap charms in honor of the season. Stuffy guys with huge sharp-root heads stood guard. From above the open bay over the main doors, the butt of the head beam jutted. A rope had been fastened around this. Below, in the yard, the boys had built a good-sized stack of hay. Oi stood on one side of it, Andy on the other. They were both looking up as Benny Sleitman grabbed the rope, gave it a tug, then retreated back into the loft and out of sight. Oi began to bark in anticipation. A moment later, Benny came pelting forward with the rope wrapped in his fists and his hair flying out behind him.
"Gilead and the Eld!" he cried and leaped from the bay.
He swung into the red sunset air with his shadow trailing behind him.
"Ben! Ben!"
Oi barked.
"Ben! Ben! Ben!"
The boy let go, flew into the haystack, disappeared, then popped up laughing. Andy offered him a metal hand, but Benny ignored it, flopping out onto the hard-packed earth. Oi ran around him, barking. "Do they always call so at play?" Roland asked. Eisenhart snorted laughter.
"Not at all. Usually it's a cry of Oriza, or Man Jesus, or Hail the Kala, or all three. Your boy's been filling Sleitman's boy full of tales, thinks I."
Roland ignored the slightly disapproving note in this and watched Jake reel in the rope. Benny lay on the ground, playing dead, until Oi licked his face. Then he sat up, giggling. Roland had no doubt that if the boy had gone off course, Andy would have snagged him. To one side of the barn was a remuda of workhorses, perhaps 20 in all. A trio of cowpokes and chaps and battered shore boots were leading the last half-dozen mounts toward it. On the other side of the yard was a slaughter pen filled with steers. In the following weeks, they would be butchered and sent downriver on the trading boats. Jake retreated into the loft, then came pelting forward.
"New York!" he shouted. "Times Square! Empire State Building! Twin Towers! Statue of Liberty!"
And he launched himself into space along the arc of the rope. They watched him disappear, laughing, into the pile of hay.
"Any particular reason you wanted your other two to stay with the Jeffersons?"
Eisenhart asked. He spoke idly, but Roland thought this was a question that interested him more than a little. "Best we spread ourselves around. Let as many as possible get a good look at us. Time is short. Decisions must be made." All of which was true, but there was more, and Eisenhart probably knew it. He was shrewder than Overholser. He was also dead set against standing up to the wolves, at least so far. This didn't keep Roland from liking the man, who was big and honest and possessed of an earthy countryman's sense of humor. Roland thought he might come around if he could be shown they had a chance to win. On their way out to the Rocking Bee, they had visited half a dozen smallhold farms along the river where rice was the main crop. Eisenhart had performed the introductions good-naturedly enough. At each stop, Roland had asked the two questions he had asked the previous night at the pavilion. "Will you open to us if we open to you? Do you see us for what we are and accept us for what we do?" All of them had answered yes. Eisenhart had also answered yes. But Roland knew better than to ask the third question of any. There was no need to, not yet. They still had over 3 weeks.
"We bide, gunslinger," Eisenhart said. "Even in the face of the wolves, we bide. Once there was Gilead, and now there's Gilead no more. None knows better than you, but still we bide. If we stand against the wolves, all that may change. To you and yours, what happens along the crescent might not mean as much as a fart in a high wind, one way or the other. If you win and survive, you'll move along. If you lose and die, we have nowhere to go."
"But—" Eisenhart raised his hand.
"Hear me, I beg. Would you hear me?"
Roland nodded, resigned to it. And for him to speak was probably for the best. Beyond them, the boys were running back into the barn for another leap. Soon, the coming dark would put an end to their game. The gunslinger wondered how Eddie and Susanna were making out. Had they spoken to Tien's grand-père yet? And if so, had he told them anything of value?
Suppose they send 50 or even 60, as they have before, many and many a. And suppose we wipe them out. And then suppose that a week or a month later, after you're gone, they send 500 against us.
Roland considered the question. As he was doing so, Margaret Eisenhart joined them. She was a slim woman, 40-ish, small-breasted, dressed in jeans and a shirt of gray silk. Her hair, pulled back in a bun against her neck, was black threaded with white. One hand hid beneath her apron.
"That's a fair question," she said, "but this might not be a fair time to ask it. Give him and his friends a week, why don't you, to peek about and see what they may see."
Eisenhart gave his sigh a look that was half humorous and half irritated.
"Do I tell E how to run your kitchen, woman? When to cook and when to wash?" "Only 4 times a week," said she.
Then, seeing Roland rise from the rocker next to her husband's,
"Nay, sit still, I beg you. I've been in a chair this last hour, peeling sharproot with Edna, Jan's auntie."
She nodded in Benny's direction.
"It's good to be on my feet."
She watched, smiling, as the boys swung out into the pile of hay and landed, laughing, while Oi danced and barked.
"Vaughn and I have never had to face the full horror of it before, Roland. We had 6, all twins, but all grown in the time between. So we may not have all the understanding needed to make such a decision as you ask."
"Being lucky doesn't make a man stupid," Eisenhart said. "Quite the contrary, is what I think. Cool eyes see clear."
"Perhaps," she said, watching the boys run back into the barn. They were bumping shoulders and laughing, each trying to get to the ladder first.
"Perhaps, aye, but the heart must call for its rights, too, and a man or woman who doesn't listen is a fool. Sometimes 'tis best to swing on the rope, even if it's too dark to see if the hay's there or not."
Roland reached out and touched her hand. "I couldn't have said better myself." She gave him a small, distracted smile. It was only a moment before she returned her attention to the boys, but it was long enough for Roland to see that she was frightened. Terrified, in fact.
"Ben? Jake?" she called. "Enough. Time to wash and then come in. There's pie for those can eat it, and cream to go on top."
Benny came to the open bay.
"My dad says we can sleep in my tent over on the bluff, Si, if it's all right with you."
Margaret Eisenhart looked at her husband. Eisenhart nodded.
"All right," she said. "Tent it is, and give you joy of it, but come in now if you'd have pie. Last warning. And wash first, mind ye, hands and faces." "Aye, say thank you," Benny said. "Can I have pie?"
Margaret Eisenhart thudded the pad of her left hand against her brow as if she had a headache. The right, Roland was interested to note, stayed beneath her apron.
"Aye," she said. "Pie for the bumbler, too, as I'm sure he's Arthur Eld in disguise, and will reward me with jewels and gold and the healing touch." "Thank ye, Si,"
Jake called.
"Could we have one more swing first? It's the quickest way down."
"I'll catch them if they fly wrong, Margaret, Si," Andy said.
His eyes flashed blue, then dimmed. He appeared to be smiling. To Roland, the robot seemed to have 2 personalities, one old maidish, the other harmlessly cousining. The gunslinger liked neither, and understood why perfectly. He'd come to mistrust machinery of all kinds, and especially the kind that walked and talked.
"Well," Eisenhart said, "the broken leg usually hides in the last caper, but have on if you must."
They had on, and there were no broken legs. Both boys hit the hay pile squarely, popped up laughing and looking at each other, then foot-raced for the kitchen with Oi running behind them, appearing to herd them.
"It's wonderful how quickly children can become friends," Margaret Eisenhart said, but she didn't look like one contemplating something wonderful.
She looked sad. "Yes," Roland said, "wonderful it is." He laid his purse across his lap, seemed on the verge of pulling the knot that anchored the laces, then didn't. "Which are your men good with?" he asked Eisenhart. "Bow or ba? For I know it's surely not the rifle or revolver."
"We favor the ba," Eisenhart said. "Fit the bolt, wind it, aim it, fire it, 'tis done."
Roland nodded. It was as he had expected, not good, because the ba was rarely accurate at a distance greater than 25 yards, and that only on a still day. On one when a strong breeze was kicking up, or, God's help us, a gale. But Eisenhart was looking at his wife, looking at her with a kind of reluctant admiration. She stood with her eyebrows raised, looking back at her man, looking him back a question. What was this? It surely had to do with the hand under the apron.
Go on, tell him, Eisenhart said.
Then he pointed an almost angry finger at Roland, like the barrel of a pistol.
It changes nothing, though, nothing. Say thank you.
This last with the lips drawn back in a kind of savage grin. Roland was more puzzled than ever, but he felt a faint stirring of hope. It might be false hope, probably would be, but anything was better than the worries and confusions and the aches that had beset him lately.
Nay, Margaret said with maddening modesty, 'tis not my place to tell. To show, perhaps, but not to tell.
Eisenhart sighed, considered, then turned to Roland.
Ye danced the rice dance, he said, so ye know Lady Ariza.
Roland nodded. The Lady of the Rice, in some places considered a goddess, in others a heroine, in some, both.
And you know how she did away with Grey Dick, who killed her father.
Roland nodded again. 2. According to the story, a good one that he must remember to tell Eddie, Susanna, and Jake when, and if, there was once more time for storytelling, Lady Ariza invited Grey Dick, a famous outlaw prince, to a vast dinner party in Weydon, her castle by the River Send. She wanted to forgive him for the murder of her father, she said, for she had accepted the man Jesus into her heart, and such was according to his teachings.
You'll get me there and kill me. Be I stupid enough to come? Said Grey Dick.
Nay, nay, said the Lady Ariza, never think it. All weapons will be left outside the castle. And when we sit in the banqueting hall below, there will be only me at one end of the table and thee at the other.
You'll conceal a dagger in your sleeve or a bola beneath your dress, said Grey Dick. And if you don't, I will.
Nay, nay, said the Lady Ariza, never think it, for we shall both be naked. At this, Grey Dick was overcome with lust, for Lady Ariza was fair. It excited him to think of his prick getting hard at the sight of her bare breasts and bush, and no breeches on him to conceal his excitement from her maiden's eye. And he thought he understood why she would make such a proposal. His haughty heart will undo him, Lady Ariza told her maid, whose name was Marion, and who went on to have many fanciful adventures of her own.
The lady was right. I've killed Lord Grenfell, wiliest lord in all the river baronies, Grey Dick told himself. And who is left to avenge him but one weak daughter? Ah, but she was fair. So she sues for peace, and maybe even for marriage, if she has audacity and imagination as well as beauty.
So he accepted her offer. His men searched the banquet hall downstairs before he arrived and found no weapons, not on the table, not under the table, not behind the tapestries. What none of them could know was that for weeks before the banquet, Lady Ariza had practiced throwing a specially weighted dinner plate. She did this for hours a day. She was athletically inclined to begin with, and her eyes were keen. Also, she hated Grey Dick with all her heart, and had determined to make him pay no matter what the cost. The dinner plate wasn't just weighted. Its rim had been sharpened. Dick's men overlooked this, as she and Marion had been sure they would. And so they banqueted, and what a strange banquet that must have been, with the laughing, handsome outlaw naked at one end of the table, and the demurely smiling but exquisitely beautiful maiden 30 feet from him at the other end, equally naked. They toasted each other with Lord Grenfell's finest rough red. It infuriated the lady to the point of madness to watch him slurp that exquisite country wine down as though it were water, scarlet drops rolling off his chin and splashing to his hairy chest. But she gave no sign, simply smiled coquettishly and sipped from her own glass. She could feel the weight of his eyes on her breasts. It was like having unpleasant bugs lumbering to and fro on her skin. How long did this charade go on? Some tale-tellers had her putting an end to Grey Dick after the second toast. His, may your beauty ever increase. Hers, May your first day in hell last 10,000 years, and may it be the shortest. Others, the sort of spinners who enjoyed drawing out the suspense, recounted a meal of 12 courses before Lady Oriza gripped the special plate, looking Grey Dick in the eyes, and smiling at him while she turned it, feeling for the dull place on the rim where it would be safe to grip. No matter how long the tale, it always ended the same way, with Lady Oriza flinging the plate. Little fluted channels had been carved on its underside beneath the sharpened rim to help it fly true. As it did, humming weirdly as it went, casting its fleeting shadow on the roast pork and turkey, the heaping bowls of vegetables, the fresh fruit piled on crystal serving dishes. A moment after she flung the plate on its slightly rising course, her arm was still outstretched, her first finger and cocked thumb pointing at her father's assassin. Grey Dick's head flew out through the open door and into the foyer behind him. For a moment longer, Grey Dick's body stood there with its penis pointing at her like an accusing finger. Then the dick shriveled, and the dick behind it crashed forward onto a huge roast of beef and a mountain of herbed rice. Lady Oriza, whom Roland would hear referred to as the Lady of the Plate in some of his wanderings, raised her glass of wine and toasted the body. She said, 3.
May your first day in hell last 10,000 years, Roland murmured.
Margaret nodded. Aye, and let that one be the shortest. A terrible toast, but one I'd gladly give each of the wolves, each and every one.
Her visible hand clenched. In the fading red light, she looked feverish and ill.
We had 6, do you? And even 6. Has he told you why none of them are here to help with the Reaptide slaughtering and penning? Has he told you that, gunslinger?
Margaret, there's no need, Eisenhart said. He shifted uncomfortably in his rocker.
Aye, but mayhap there is. It goes back to what we were saying before. Mayhap you pay a price for leaping, but sometimes you pay a higher one for looking. Our children grew up free and clear, with no wolves to worry about. I gave birth to my first 2, Tom and Tessa, less than a month before they came last time. The others followed along, neat as peas out of a pod. The youngest be only 15, do you not see it?
Margaret,
she ignored him. But they'd not be so lucky with their own children, and they knew it. And so they're gone. Some far north along the Ark, some far south, looking for a place where the wolves don't come.
She turned to Eisenhart, and although she spoke to Roland, it was her husband she looked at as she had her final word.
1 of every 2. That's the wolves' bounty. That's what they take every 20-some for many and many a. Except for us. They took all of our children. Every single one.
She leaned forward and tapped Roland's leg just above the knee with great emphasis.
Do you not see it?
Silence fell on the back porch. The condemned steers in the slaughter pen mooed moronically. From the kitchen came the sound of boy laughter following some comment of Andy's. Eisenhart had dropped his head. Roland could see nothing but the extravagant bush of his mustache, but he didn't need to see the man's face to know that he was either weeping or struggling very hard not to.
I'd not make you feel bad for all the rice of the Ark, she said, and stroked her husband's shoulder with infinite tenderness. And they come back betimes, aye, which is more than the dead do, except in our dreams. They're not so old that they don't miss their mother or have how-do-you-do-it questions for their da, but they're gone, nevertheless. And that's the price of safety, as you must ken.
She looked down at Eisenhart for a moment, one hand on his shoulder and the other still beneath her apron.
Now tell how angry with me you are, she said, for I'd know.
Eisenhart shook his head.
Not angry, he said in a muffled voice.
And have you changed your mind?
Eisenhart shook his head again.
Stubborn old thing, she said, but she spoke with good-humored affection. Stubborn as a stick, aye, and we all say thank you.
I'm thinking about it, he said, still not looking up.
Still thinking, which is more than I expected at this late date. Usually I make up my mind and there's the end of it. Roland, I understand young Jake showed Overholzer and the rest of him some shooting out in the woods. Might be we could show you something right here that'd raise your eyebrows. Maggie, go in and get your Oriza.
No need,
she said, at last taking her hand from beneath her apron, for I brought it out with me, and here 'tis. 4. It was a plate both Detta and Mia would have recognized, a blue plate with a delicate webbed pattern, a for special plate. After a moment, Roland recognized the webbing for what it was, young Oryza, the seedling rice plant. When Cy Eisenhart tapped her knuckles on the plate, it gave out a peculiar high ringing. It looked like china, but wasn't. Glass, then? Some sort of glass? He held his hand out for it with the solemn, respectful mien of one who knows and respects weapons. She hesitated, biting the corner of her lip. Roland reached into his holster, which he'd strapped back on before the noon meal outside the church, and pulled his revolver. He held it out to her. But first.
Nay, she said, letting the word out on a long breath of sigh. No need to offer me your shooter as a hostage, Roland. I reckon if Vaughn trusts you at the house, I can trust you with my Oryza. But mind how you touch, or you'll lose another finger, and I think you could ill afford that, for I see you're already too shy on your right hand.
A single look at the blue plate, the size Oryza, made it clear how wise that warning was. At the same time, Roland felt a bright spark of excitement and appreciation. It had been long years since he'd seen a new weapon of worth, and never one like this. The plate was metal, not glass. Some light, strong alloy. It was the size of an ordinary dinner plate, a foot and a bit more in diameter. 3/4 of the edge had been sharpened to suicidal keenness.
There's never a question of where to grip, even if you're in a hurry, Margaret said. For, do you see?
Yes, Roland said in a tone of deepest admiration. 2 of the rice stalks crossed in what could have been the great letter Z sub N, which by itself means both Zai, eternity, and now. At the point where these stalks crossed, only a sharp eye would pick them out of the bigger pattern to begin with, the rim of the plate was not only dull, but slightly thicker. Good to grip. Roland turned the plate over. Beneath, in the center, was a small metal pod. To Jake, it might have looked like the plastic pencil sharpener he'd taken to school in his pocket as a first grader. To Roland, who had never seen a pencil sharpener, it looked a little like the abandoned egg case of some insect.
That makes the whistling noise when the plate flies, do you, Ken? She said. She had seen Roland's honest admiration and was reacting to it, her color high and her eye bright.
Roland had heard that tone of eager explanation many times before, but not for a long time now. It has no other purpose?
None, she said, but it must whistle, for it's part of the story, isn't it?
Roland nodded. Of course it was. The Sisters of Oryza, Margaret Eisenhart said, was a group of women who liked to help others.
And gossip amongst themselves, Eisenhart growled, but he sounded good-humored.
Aye, that too, she allowed.
They cooked for funerals and festivals. It was the sisters who had put on the previous night's banquet at the pavilion. They sometimes held sewing circles and quilting bees after a family had lost its belongings to fire, or when one of the river floods came every 6 or 8 years and drowned the smallholders closest to Divar Titiwai. It was the sisters who kept the pavilion well-tended and the town gathering hall well-swept on the inside and well-kept on the outside. They put on dances for the young people and chaperoned them. They were sometimes hired by the richer folk, such as the Tooks and their kin, do you, she said, to cater wedding celebrations, and such affairs were always fine, the talk of the Kala for months afterward, sure. Among themselves, they did gossip, aye, she'd not deny it. They also played cards, and points, and castles.
And you throw the plate, Roland said.
Aye, said she, but you must understand we only do it for the fun of the thing. Hunting's men's work, and they do fine with the ba.
She was stroking her husband's shoulder again, this time a bit nervously, Roland thought. He also thought that if the men really did do fine with the ba, she never would have come out with that pretty, deadly thing held under her apron in the first place. Nor would Eisenhart have encouraged her. Roland opened his tobacco pouch, took out one of Rosalita's cornshuck pulls, and drifted it toward the plate's sharp edge. The square of cornshuck fluttered to the porch a moment later, cut, neatly in two. Only for the fun of the thing, Roland thought, and almost smiled. "What metal," he asked, "does thee know?" She raised her eyebrows slightly at this form of address, but didn't comment on it. "Titanium is what Andy calls it. It comes from a great old factory building far north in Kalasen Cree. There are many ruins there. I've never been, but I've heard the tales. It sounds spooky." Roland nodded. "And the plates, how are they made? Does Andy do it?" She shook her head. "He can't or won't. I know not which. It's the ladies of Kalasen Cree who make them and send them to the Kalas all round about. Although Divine is as far south as that sort of trading reaches, I think."
"The ladies make these," Roland mused. "The ladies."
"Somewhere there's a machine that still makes them, that's all it is," Eisenhart said. Roland was amused at his tone of stiff defensiveness. "Comes down to no more than pushing a button, I imagine."
Margaret, looking at him with a woman's smile, said nothing to this, either for or against. Perhaps she didn't know, but she certainly knew the politics that keep a marriage sweet.
"So there are sisters north and south of here along the Ark," Roland said, "and all of them throw the plate."
"Aye, from Kala Senkri to Kala Divine south of us. Farther south or north, I don't know. We like to help and we like to talk. We throw our plates once a month in memory of how Lady Oriza did for Grey Dick. But few of us are any good at it."
"Are you good at it, Sai?"
She was silent, biting at the corner of her lip again.
"Show him," Eisenhart growled. "Show him and be done."
5. They walked down the steps, the rancher's wife leading the way, Eisenhart behind her, Roland third. Behind them, the kitchen door opened and banged shut.
"God's a glory, Mrs. Eisenhart's going to throw the dish," Benny Sleitman cried gleefully. "Jake, you won't believe it."
"Send them back in, Vaughn," she said. "They don't need to see this."
"Nah, let him look," Eisenhart said. "Don't hurt a boy to see a woman do well."
"Send them back, Roland, aye." She looked at him, flushed and flustered and very pretty. To Roland, she looked 10 years younger than when she'd come out on the porch, but he wondered how she'd fling in such a state. It was something he much wanted to see because ambushing was brutal work, quick and emotional.
"I agree with your husband," he said. "I'd let them stay."
"Have it as you like," she said.
Roland saw she was actually pleased, that she wanted an audience, and his hope grew. He thought it increasingly likely that this pretty, middle-aged wife, with her small breasts and salt-and-pepper hair, had a hunter's heart. Not a gunslinger's heart. But at this point he would settle for a few hunters. A few killers, male or female. She marched toward the barn. When they were 50 yards from the stuffy guys flanking the barn door, Roland touched her shoulder and made her stop.
"Nay," she said, "this is too far."
"I've seen you fling as far and half again," her husband said, and stood firm in the face of her angry look. "So I have."
"Not with a gunslinger from the line of Eld standing by my right elbow, you haven't," she said,
but she stood where she was. Roland went to the barn door and took the grinning, sharp-root head from the stuffy on the left side. He went into the barn. Here was a stall filled with freshly picked sharp-root, and beside it one of potatoes. He took one of the potatoes and set it atop the stuffy guy's shoulders where the sharp-root had been. It was a good-sized spud, but the contrast was still comic. The stuffy guy now looked like Mr. Tinyhead in a carnival show or street fair.
"Oh, Roland, no," she cried, sounding genuinely shocked. "I could never."
"I don't believe you," he said, and stood aside.
"Throw."
For a moment he thought she wouldn't. She looked around for her husband. If Eisenhart had still been standing beside her, Roland thought, she would have thrust the plate into his hands and run for the house, and never mind if he cut himself on it either. But Von Eisenhart had withdrawn to the foot of the steps. The boys stood above him, Benny Sleitman watching with mere interest, Jake with closer attention, his brows drawn together and the smile now gone from his face.
"Roland, I—"
"None of it, missus, I beg. Your talk of leaping was all very fine, but now I'd see you do it. Throw." She recoiled a little, eyes widening as if she had been slapped. Then she turned to face the barn door and drew her right hand above her left shoulder. The plate glimmered in the late light, which was now more pink than red. Her lips had thinned to a white line. For a moment, all the world held still.
"Ryza!" she cried in a shrill, furious voice, and cast her arm forward. Her hand opened, the index finger pointing precisely along the path the plate would take. Of all of them in the yard, the cowpokes had also stopped to watch. Only Roland's eyes were sharp enough to follow the flight of the dish.
"True," he exulted, "true as ever was." The plate gave a kind of moaning howl as it bolted above the dirt yard. Less than 2 seconds after it had left her hand, the potato lay in two pieces, one by the stuffy guy's gloved right hand and the other by its left. The plate itself stuck in the side of the barn door, quivering. The boys raised a cheer. Benny hoisted his hand, as his new friend had taught him, and Jake slapped him a high five.
"Great going, Cy Eisenhart," Jake called. "Good hit, say thank you," Benny added.
Roland observed the way the woman's lips drew back from her teeth at this hapless, well-meant praise. She looked like a horse that has seen a snake.
"Boys," she said, "I'd go inside now. Where are you?"
Benny was bewildered. Jake, however, took another look at Margaret Eisenhart and understood. "You did what you had to." And then the reaction set in.
"Come on, Ben," he said. "But come on!"
Jake took his new friend by the shirt and tugged him back toward the kitchen door. Roland let the woman stay where she was for a moment, head down, trembling with reaction. Strong color still blazed in her cheeks, but everywhere else her skin had gone as pale as milk. He thought she was struggling not to vomit. He went to the barn door, grasped the plate at the grasping place, and pulled. He was astounded at how much effort it took before the plate first wiggled and then pulled loose. He brought it back to her, held it out. "Thy tool." For a moment she didn't take it, only looked at him with a species of bright hate.
"Why do you mock me, Roland? How do you know Vaughn took me from the Manny clan? Tell us that, I beg."
It was the rose, of course. An intuition left by the touch of the rose, and it was also the tail of her face, which was a womanly version of the old Henchick's. But how he knew what he knew was no part of this woman's business. And he only shook his head. "Nay, but I do not mock thee." Margaret Eisenhart abruptly seized Roland by the neck. Her grip was dry and so hot her skin felt feverish. She pulled his ear to her uneasy, twitching mouth. He thought he could smell every bad dream she must have had since deciding to leave her people for Colubrin Sturgis's big rancher.
"I saw thee speak to Henchick last night," she said. "Will you speak to him more? You will, won't you?"
Roland nodded, transfixed by her grip, the strength of it, the little puffs of air against his ear. Did a lunatic hide deep down inside everyone, even such a woman as this? He didn't know.
"Good, say thank you. Tell him Margaret of the Redpath clan does fine with her heathen man, aye, fine still." Her grip tightened. "Tell him she regrets nothing. Will he do that for me?"
"Aye, lady, if you like." She snatched the plate from him, fearless of its lethal edge. Having it seemed to steady her. She looked at him from eyes in which tears swam, unshed.
"Is it the cave you spoke of with my da? The doorway cave?"
Roland nodded. "What would you visit on us, ye chary gunstruck man?" Eisenhart joined them. He looked uncertainly at his wife, who had endured exile from her people for his sake. For a moment she looked at him as though she didn't know him. "I only do as Ka wills," Roland said.
"Ka!"
she cried, and her lip lifted. A sneer transformed her good looks to an ugliness that was almost startling. It would have frightened the boys.
"Every troublemaker's excuse. Put it up your bum with the rest of the dirt."
"I do as Ka wills, and so will you," Roland said. She looked at him, seeming not to comprehend. Roland took the hot hand that had gripped him and squeezed it, not quite to the point of pain. "And so will you." She met his gaze for a moment, then dropped her eyes.
"Aye," she muttered. "Oh, aye, so do we all."
She ventured to look at him again.
"Will you give Henchick my message?"
"Aye, lady, as I said."
The darkening dooryard was silent except for the distant call of a rusty. The cowpokes still leaned at the Rumuda fence. Roland ambled over to them. "Evening, gents."
"Hope you do well,"
one said and touched his forehead. "May you do better," Roland said. "Missus threw the plate and she threw it well, say I."
"Say thank you," another of them agreed. "No rust on the missus."
"No rust," Roland agreed. "And will I tell you something now, gents? A word to tuck beneath your hats, as we do say." They looked at him warily. Roland looked up, smiled at the sky, then looked back at them.
"Set my watch and warrant on it. You might want to speak of it. Tell what you saw."
They watched him cautiously, not liking to admit to this.
"Speak of it, and I'll kill every one of you," Roland said. "Do you understand me?"
Eisenhart touched his shoulder.
"Roland,"
surely the gunslinger shrugged his hand off without looking at him.
"Do you understand me?"
They nodded.
"And believe me."
They nodded again. They looked frightened. Roland was glad to see it. They were right to be afraid.
"Say thank you."
"Say thanks,"
one of them repeated. He had broken a sweat.
"Aye," said the second.
"Thank you, big, big,"
said the third, and shot a nervous stream of tobacco to one side. Eisenhart tried again.
"Roland, hear me, I beg."
But Roland didn't. His mind was alight with ideas. All at once he saw their course with perfect clarity. Their course on this side, at least. "Where's the robot?" he asked the rancher.
"Andy? Went in the kitchen with the boys, I think."
"Good. Do you have a stock line office in there?" He nodded toward the barn.
"Aye."
"Let's go there, then. You, me, and your missus."
"I'd like to take her into the house a bit,"
Eisenhart said.
"I'd like to take her anywhere that's away from you," Roland read in his eyes.
"Our palaver won't be long," Roland said, and with perfect honesty. He'd already seen everything he needed. 6. The stock line office only had a single chair, the one behind the desk. Margaret took it. Eisenhart sat on a footstool. Roland squatted on his hunkers with his back to the wall and his purse open before him. He had shown them the twins' map. Eisenhart hadn't immediately grasped what Roland had pointed out, might not grasp it even now, but the woman did. Roland thought it no wonder she hadn't been able to stay with the Manny. The Manny were peaceful. Margaret Eisenhart was not. Not once he got below her surface, at any rate.
"You'll keep this to yourselves," he said.
"Or they'll kill us like our cowpokes?" she asked.
Roland gave her a patient look, and she colored beneath it.
"I'm sorry, Roland, I'm upset. It comes of throwing the plate in hot blood."
Eisenhart put an arm around her. This time she accepted it gladly and laid her head on his shoulder.
"Who else in your group can throw as well as that?" Roland asked. "Any?"
"Zelia Jaffords," she said at once.
"Say true?"
She nodded emphatically.
"Zelia could have cut that tater in 2 10-for-10 at 20 paces farther back."
"Others?"
"Sari Adams, wife of Diego.
And Rosalita Munoz."
Roland raised his eyebrows at that.
"I," she said. "Other than Zelia, Rosie's best."
A brief pause.
"And me, I suppose."
Roland felt as if a huge weight had rolled off his back. He'd been convinced they'd somehow have to bring back weapons from New York or find them on the east side of the river. Now it looked as if that might not be necessary. Good. They had other business in New York, business involving Calvin Tower. He didn't want to mix the two unless he absolutely had to.
"I'd see you four women at the old fellow's rectory house, and just you four."
His eyes flicked briefly to Eisenhart, then back to Eisenhart's sigh. "No husbands."
"Now wait just a damn minute,"
Eisenhart said.
Roland held up his hand. "Nothing's been decided yet."
"It's the way it's not been decided I don't care for,"
Eisenhart said.
"Hush a minute," Margaret said. "When would you see us?"
Roland calculated. 24 days left, perhaps only 23, and still much left to see. And there was the thing hidden in the old fellow's church, that to deal with too. And the old Manny, Henchik. Yet in the end, he knew, the day would come and things would play out with shocking suddenness. They always did. 5 minutes, 10 at most, and all would be finished, for good or ill. The trick
was to be ready when those few minutes came around. 10 days from now, he said. In the evening, I'd see the four of you in competition, turn and turn about.
All right, she said. That much we can do. But Roland, I'll not throw so much as a single plate or raise a single finger against the wolves if my husband still says no.
I understand, Roland said, knowing she would do as he said, like it or not. When the time came, they all would. There was one small window in the office wall, dirty and festooned with cobwebs, but clear enough for them to be able to see Andy marching across the yard, his electric eyes flashing on and off in the deepening twilight. He was humming to himself. Eddie says robots are programmed to do certain tasks, he said. Andy does the tasks you bid him?
Mostly, yes, Eisenhart said. Not always, and he's not always around, you can.
Hard to believe he was built to do no more than sing foolish songs and tell horoscopes, Roland mused.
Perhaps the old people gave him hobbies, Margaret Eisenhart said. And now that his main tasks are gone, lost in time, do you ken, he concentrates on the hobbies.
You think the old people made him?
Who else?
Von Eisenhart asked. Andy was gone now, and the backyard was empty. Aye, who else? Roland said, still musing. Who else would have the wit and the tools? But the old people were gone 2,000 years before the wolves began raiding into the Kala, 2,000 or more. So what I'd like to know is who or what programmed Andy not to talk about them, except to tell you folks when they're coming. And here's another question, not as interesting as that, but still curious. Why does he tell you that much if he cannot or will not tell you anything else?
Eisenhart and his wife were looking at each other, thunderstruck. They'd not gotten past the first part of what Roland had said. The gunslinger wasn't surprised, but he was a little disappointed in them. Really, there was much here that was obvious. If, that was, one set one's wits to work, in fairness to the Eisenharts, Jaffordses, and Overholzers of the Kala, he supposed, straight thinking wasn't so easy when your babbies were at stake. There was a knock at the door. Eisenhart called, "Come!" It was Ben Sleitman.
"Stock's all put to bed, boss."
He took off his glasses and polished them on his shirt.
"And the boys are off with Benny's tent. Andy was stalking them close, so that's well."
Sleitman looked at Roland.
"It's early for rock cats, but if one were to come, Andy'd give my boy at least one shot at it with his ba. He's been told so, and comes back, order recorded. If Benny were to miss, Andy'd get between the boys and the cat. He's programmed strictly for defense, and we've never been able to change that, but if the cat were to keep coming—"
"Andy'd rip it to pieces," Eisenhart said.
He spoke with a species of gloomy satisfaction.
"Fast, is he?" Roland asked.
"You're a bugger," Sleitman said.
"Don't look it, do he, all tall and gangly like he is, but he can move like greased lightning when he wants to. Faster than any rock cat. We believe he must run on antinomics."
"Very likely," Roland said absently.
"Never mind that," Eisenhart said. "But listen, Ben, why do you suppose it is that Andy won't talk about the wolves?"
"His programming."
"Aye, but it's as Roland pointed out to us just before he came in. And we should have seen it for ourselves long before this, if the old people set him a-going, and then the old people died out or moved on, long before the wolves showed themselves. Do you see the problem?"
Sleitman the elder nodded, then put his glasses back on.
"Must have been something like the wolves in the Elden days, don't you think? Enough like them so Andy can't tell them apart. It's all I can figure."
"Is it really?" Roland thought. He produced the Tavery twins' map, opened it, and tapped an arroyo in the hill country northeast of town. It wound its way deeper and deeper into those hills before ending in one of the Kala's old garnet mines. This one was a shaft that went 30 feet into a hillside and then stopped. The place wasn't really much like Eyebolt Canyon in Magus. There was no thinny in the arroyo, for one thing, but there was one crucial similarity. Both were dead ends. And Roland knew a man will try to take service again from that which has served him once, that he should pick this arroyo, this dead-end mine shaft, for his ambush of the wolves made perfect sense. To Eddie, to Susanna, to the Eisenharts, and now to the Eisenharts' foreman, it would make sense to Sari Adams and Rosalita Munoz. It would make sense to the old fella. He would disclose this much of his plan to others, and it would make sense to them as well. And if things were left out? If some of what he said was a lie? If the wolves got wind of the lie and believed it? That would be good, wouldn't it? Good if they lunged and snapped in the right direction, but at the wrong thing. Yes, but I'll need to trust someone with the whole truth eventually. Who? Not Susanna, because Susanna was now two again, and he didn't trust the other one. Not Eddie, because Eddie might let something crucial slip to Susanna, and then Mia would know. Not Jake, because Jake had become fast friends with Benny Sleitman. He was on his own again, and this condition had never felt more lonely to him. Look, he said, tapping the arroyo, here's a place you might think of, Sleitman. Easy to get in, not so easy to get back out. Suppose we were to take all the children of a certain age and tuck them away safe in this little bit of a mine. He saw understanding begin to dawn in Sleitman's eyes. Something else, too. Hope, maybe.
If we hide the children, they know where, Eisenhart said. It's as if they smell them, like ogres in a kid's cradle story.
So I'm told, Roland said. What I suggest is that we could use that.
Make him bait, you mean? Gunslinger, that's hard.
Roland, who had no intention of putting the Kala's children in the abandoned garnet mine, or anywhere near it, nodded his head. Hard world sometimes, Eisenhart.
Say thank you, Eisenhart replied, but his face was grim. He touched the map. Could work. Aye, could work. If you could suck all the wolves in.
Wherever the children wind up, I'll need help putting them there, Roland thought. There'll have to be people who know where to go and what to do. A plan, but not yet. For now, I can play the game I'm playing. It's like castles, because someone's hiding. Did he know that? He did not. Did he smell it? Aye, he did. Now it's 24, Roland thought. 24 days until the wolves. It would have to be enough.